online
at bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is the UK's home of live news and live sport.
5 Live.
Pyres, I think that's the name, says, question for Mark. Listening to Nick Park earlier,
yes.
Wallace and Gromit, et al., made me wonder, are there any films that are critic-proof? Because 5 stars in Empire, it's already out in Australia, the reviewers there think it's fantastic. You know, there is a sense sometimes...
I think there are. I think, you know, there's loads and loads of blockbusters. It doesn't matter what the critics say about them. It makes no difference at all. I mean, Revolver has gone in at number 2 in the charts, you know, and I defy you to find me a good word said sensibly about that movie. So, yeah, the general rule is that, you know, a really big studio movies that are aimed at people who actually don't pay attention to critics, which is an awful lot of people, are completely critic-proof, which is why critics always get so angry when the studios say, oh, you know, you've bad-mouthed our movie and you've damaged it. It's rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. I mean, honestly, if movies were not critic-proof, I'd be very happy if I was able to sink a film I really hated, but I'm not. I mean, I think most... The interesting thing is that small art house movies will benefit from critical support, but large Hollywood movies will not suffer.
So presumably the Harry Potter movies are critic-proof because
it doesn't matter what
you think, because the people have read the books, the kids say, I want to go, and so therefore...
Well, I might give you another example. You know, The Revenge of the Sith. I mean, who said a good word about Revenge of the Sith? It's the amount of money it's taken is in the realms of astromass.
Okay, so the answer to that is yes.
Yes, there's plenty. Yeah.
The scariest U certificate movie, that was again referenced on Nick Park conversation. Damien in Burnley would suggest Disney's The Watcher in the Woods, which scared the life out of him as a kid. Watership Down, Paul in a Hertfordshire.
Is that a U? Yes.
Suggestion. This is Sam.
2001 was a U, interestingly enough, which is quite a worrying movie. And apparently Stanley Kubrick, originally the BBFC wanted to give it an A certificate, and Stanley Kubrick insisted that they showed it to a load of school kids and said, no, it's a U certificate movie.
Sam in Kent, just a short note to thank Mark for his recommendation of The Vanishing.
Oh, great.
Spoorloos. Excellent Dutch thriller, which I saw for the first time this week. Creepy and brilliantly acted throughout, with an ending that really lodges itself in your mind. Terrific stuff.
A 12 certificate movie, and that is one of the scariest films I have ever seen.
The winner of our Nick Park competition, by the way, who's going to the premiere on Sunday, Melissa Cunnilliff from Dover. The voice of the policeman is Peter Kay, and some great voice talent in there, and particularly startling, you don't really notice that it's anyone famous doing the voices because you're just transfixed with the characters.
Which is the mark of great animation, as opposed to Val Kilmer in The Prince of Egypt, which is the mark of, let's get Val Kilmer, he's free this week.
We'll get through the rest of the correspondence in a moment, but we'll do the box office top 10. First of all, Howl's Moving Castle at 10.
I like it very much. I don't think it's up there with Spirited Away, and my daughter prefers Kiki's Delivery Service, but I do think it's very interesting.
Cinderella Man at 9.
Liked it much more than I expected. I like Ron Howard. I think he suffers from an occasional saccharine overdose, but I think it's well worth seeing, you know, and it's a very interesting boxing movie.
Red Eye at 8.
I like it. I know I got slagged off for this last week, but I like it. I think it was, I mean, you know, it's insubstantial, but I think it's snappy and fun.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, number 7.
It's fantastic. Look how long that has been in the top 10 for. It's really good. And the new Tim Burton movie, Corpse Bride, is also really, really good. It's, you know, Tim Burton, when he's good, he's really good. And I actually like Planet of the Apes as well.
Wolf Creek at 6.
Loved it. Can't believe that we had people writing in last week saying it wasn't scary. And then yesterday, a friend of mine said that they went to see it, and they didn't think the end was as oppressive as I have felt. I mean, maybe the whole world has changed around me, and I just haven't noticed. I really thought the second half of Wolf Creek was tough going, but apparently people are enjoying it and not finding it quite as suffersome as I did.
Martin in Nottingham says, I saw Wolf Creek last night, thought it was very good. No one walked out, but I did squirm a lot.
Yeah,
also
squirming.
Struggled to sleep last night trying to reconcile the stupid decisions the girls made when trying to escape. But they always make stupid decisions in those movies, don't they? That's the whole point.
Well, there actually isn't any other decision to... we can't go into this because it kind of gives away the plot, although obviously the plot is sort of fairly self-evident. I mean, I thought it was a really tough watch, and I think it would be too tough for some people, but apparently we have a stronger or sterner breed of listener.
This is a very long letter from Graham Small, which he says is the first letter he's written in 25 years. But anyway, he says...
Is it cross or is it good?
No, well, it's just, he's just engaged.
Engaged,
he
okay.
says, if Mark says a film is rubbish, pants or tosh, I usually enjoy it. Yeah. And if he says it's great or one of the films of the year, I wouldn't go anywhere near it.
Yes.
Recently, I had to question my method when he changed his mind about The Incredibles because I thought it was a good family flick. Anyway, he goes on. We sat down and watched Wolf Creek. Mark's words were ringing in my ears, and although that there was about a, there were about 100 people in there, two people did actually leave. I'd say okay. they didn't leave because they were, quote, spine-tingly and skin-crawlingly terrified, but they were mind-numbingly bored, and I endorse everything that one of your listeners said about the film last week. It didn't scare me once. If I, the only thing the film's done for me is to wait, make my mind up never to go to Australia again.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm genuinely baffled by this.
Because, of course, all of Australia is just like Wolf Creek.
Exactly, yes. I mean, and Crocodile Dundee, as we know, or Barry McKenzie Holds His Own, or Alvin Purple, or Stalk, or any of those other films, which are such great representations of the Antipodean culture.
Anyway, we're supposed to be doing the top ten, and we're stuck at five.
You started. I know. You went off into some letter about somebody roundly abusing me, and now you're moving on swiftly.
The Longest Yard at five.
I just don't know why it exists. I mean, Adam Sandler has got better things to do with his life. I am actually now beyond the point when I can even bother to point out that I saw sort of forgave him after Punch Drunk Love because I thought that was worth it. He's just back in the hole now and it's terrible.
40-year-old virgin at four.
A strangely misguided movie and advertising campaign, and somehow the advertising campaign tells you it's Porky's whilst the movie wants to be something else, like Closer to the Big Chill, and it ends up being kind of neither one nor t'other. I didn't like it.
Land of the Dead at three.
Like it a lot. I don't think it's a classic Romero. I don't think it's up there with Dawn of the Dead, although, frankly, what is, because Dawn of the Dead is such a milestone in horror. Romero, however, still has the magic touch, and you do get the feeling that you're in the company of somebody who served their time and really knows how to do this properly, and it's an intelligent film.
Revolver at number two.
Well, you know, I refer you to the previous email about is it possible for a film to be critic-proof. The only thing I would say is that I think Revolver will go in at number two, which it has done, and go out to number two. I mean, it'll be out of the charts within the next couple of weeks because it's such a stinker. And they threw such a lot of, you know, poster ads all over the place. It's not a word-of-mouth movie because you're just left speechless, frankly.
Ben in Watford says, for reasons unknown, I went to see Revolver last weekend. The only bright spots I could find were, one, the assassin was a relatively funny character. Two, it wasn't as bad as Solaris. And that's it.
But which Solaris is he referring to?
He doesn't say. Thanks for the heads up on the lack of credits. It meant that I was one of the first to escape. Though I always think it's a shame they don't have the national anthem at the end of movies anymore.
Yeah, it is a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to look forward to.
I think it's a good thing, and I think people ought to stay through credits. But the problem is that now credits have become like half an hour long because they now credit absolutely everybody, you know, Gaffer and T-Boy and all the rest of it.
UK's number one movie, Pride and Prejudice.
Which, you know, as I think we've covered in some detail, is fine. It is no more than fine. I am amazed that people are taking it to their hearts as much as they are. I think that it's an adequate, lively, jovial, if basically insubstantial adaptation. And I don't think it'll stand the test of time. But then again, Pirates of the Caribbean got an Oscar nomination. So, hey, there is no justice in the world. It's not a bad film. It's just not a great film.
So we have some big movies to review this week. Is there? We've got a history of violence.
We've
probably not time to do that before the news. Is there something you can squeeze in? Basically, something of not much merit, which if you do 40 seconds on, is more than it's worth.
No.
Okay, we'll take the news early. It's five live, almost 3:30. Five live on the subject of good movies, which are actually good history.
Yes.
As well as Simon Sharma was in. Earlier, Martin is suggesting on this, Dan Buster's Reach for the Sky, Battle of Britain, are all pretty accurate as war films. He says, I think you'll find that the old black and white British-made war films were actually quite accurate when telling a true event. However, our American friends tend to over-egg things.
Yes, what a surprise that is.
Rico, I think, is good at writing on this text, Gallipoli, Das Boot and All the President's Men. Pretty good movies and pretty good history.
Absolutely. Gallipoli is particularly good, actually. And All the President's Men is very, very close to its real-life source, despite the fact that it's incredibly complicated in real life.
This will get you going. Mark in Bristol. Good films that portrayed history. Gandhi and Zulu. I know it's your favourite. And good history, good movie. Michael Collins as a suggestion. Well, it's not a bad movie, and the history is fine in parts and completely wrong.
In other parts,
In others. This from Martin. in Old Portsmouth. Simon and Mark, flying home from holiday last week, I viewed the prospect of watching The Longest Yard as an in-flight movie with some trepidation. It sounded a bit Bobbins.
Yes.
Was it? And then I remembered, on my iPod were the podcasts of Mark's film reviews. Wonderful, I could check beforehand. So I did. Blimey. A genuine Kermode, poppy-out eyeballs, spittle on the studio glass, 500 words a minute rant, which left him leaning on the sideboard, gasping for breath. Guess I'll wait for the second film, then. The Sisterhood of the Travelling Pants. What does Mark say? Gosh. Eyes watering, I removed my earphones. Men aren't supposed to speak in such tones. So for 4 hours to kill, with no films to watch, I thought I might stare at the seat back in front of me on the grounds that it would probably be better than The Longest Yard.
It was.
Listening to all the podcasts, how many top-end sporting events has Mark been to this year? He says, Martin, such wastefulness is wrong. Could you send me to Sundance or Gorkon or something, where I'll find a lot of very interesting film people to talk to them about
sport?
Listen,
mate, you are welcome to go to film festivals. You know what I think of film festivals? I'm not up for them.
We ought to review something that's okay. New. History of Violence would seem a good place to start.
On the subject of film festivals, I saw History of Violence first in Cannes, which has always been a bête noire of mine, and I saw Last Days at Cannes, which I thought was the worst film of the year, and I think on the same day I saw History of Violence, which for my money should have won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, so obviously won nothing, and is currently a contender for Best Movie of the Year. New movie by David Cronenberg, who is known best, I suppose, to mainstream audiences for The Fly, Dead Ringers, Scanners, which is an old sort of, you know, science fiction horror-inflected movie, and, of course, Crash, which was a famous cause celebre, was banned in Westminster for, you know, allegedly being about to bring about the end of society. I think that ban has never been repealed. I think it is still illegal to show Crash in Westminster. Hey.
That's reassuring, I think.
It is. This is an adaptation of a graphic novel, which I haven't read. The story stars Viggo Mortensen as a small-town retiring coffee shop owner called Tom.
When he says retiring, is he about to give it up, or is he
No,
just
retiring,
quiet?
As in Cheyenne retiring.
Just checking.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, but that is the correct usage of the word retiring, I think. It's going to be fractious, isn't it, from now on in.
Feel free to continue.
Okay. He is a retiring coffee shop owner. Into his coffee shop come two absolutely hideous villains. And we expect there to be appallingness ensuing. However, Tom surprisingly stands up to them, with the result that he becomes a local hero. The next thing that we know, Ed Harris comes into Tom's coffee shop dressed in that sort of standard issue gangster stroke FBI stroke threatening guy, black suit, black sunglasses, and starts demanding that Tom respond to the name of Joey, because having read about his heroics in the paper, he's figured out that Tom isn't who he says he is. But Tom has no idea who Ed Harris is.
You're the hero.
I don't know, sir.
You're the big hero. Sure took care of those two bad men.
Really don't like talking about it, sir. We're trying to get back to normal here. So can I offer you gentlemen some coffee?
Sure. Give me some coffee. Make it black.
Yes, sir.
Joey.
And your friends?
They don't drink coffee. He doesn't agree with them. Joey.
Who's Joey?
You are.
My name's Tom, sir.
Of course it is. It's good coffee.
Thank you, sir.
Hard to find coffee that's good in Philadelphia. But you know that, don't you, Tom?
The rest of the movie then pivots around the conflict between the two characters, which is this guy who's absolutely convinced that Viggo Mortensen is in fact Joey, and Viggo Mortensen, who is clearly not Joey, who is clearly Tom, and yet has done something which is out of character. And then all the boundaries start to be blurred. Now, when the film previewed in Cannes, there was an assumption, I think, from some people that it was going to be a mainstream sort of Cronenberg light, Cronenberg for hire thing. In fact, it's completely the opposite. It is a quintessential Cronenberg movie which deals with all those issues of identity that all his best films have dealt with. There's a marvellous line in The Fly, his remake of The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, which is fantastic, in which Jeff Goldblum is talking to the Gina Davis character and he says, "I'm a fly who dreamt he was a man and loved it, but now the dream is over and the insect is awake." And it's this beautiful kind of quintessential Cronenberg moment about the fluidity of identity. That is what is going on in History of Violence. And the reason it works is manifold. Firstly, a fantastic performance by Viggo Mortensen, who I think most people know probably most popularly from Lord of the Rings, but you had him on the show when he was promoting Hidalgo.
That was for Hidalgo, yeah.
He is absolutely you know, a brilliant actor. He is the Robert De Niro of his generation, the Marlon Brando of his generation. I mean, the man is a genius. He and Maria Bello do the most convincing impression of a married couple that I have seen on screen in quite some time. There are two sex scenes, love scenes between these two characters, which are absolutely staggering in the way in which they depict the intimacy of two people who know or think they know each other, who have history or think they have history. Cronenberg has obviously learned from the work that he did in films like Crash and to some extent, I suppose, with M. Butterfly. And I think those two scenes are absolutely majestically done. The other thing that's important is that what Cronenberg manages to do is to shift the tone of the piece beautifully. He changes gear like watching a car changing gear without any kind of double D clutching or any sort of, you know, break in the narrative. So the movie moves from being on the one hand light, intimate, sensitive, shockingly violent, then suddenly comic book inflected, then dreamlike, then down to earth and realistic. And he does all this with like, it's like watching Orson Welles. I mean, it is really, it's the confidence of a master filmmaker who has come through horror, who has come through, you know, psychological thrillers, who has come through works like Crash. He has done everything and he is now able to do absolutely everything. I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary the way in which he manages those changes without ever losing the audience. Now, an interesting thing was, again, when it showed in Cannes, there is one section of the movie which is particularly comic book-like, and it is, in fact, rather comic. And it produced some laughter. And somebody shouted from downstairs at the screening, you know, shut up, you cynical critics, take it seriously. Well, the interesting thing about it was, it's a film that understands comedy and understands drama and understands tragedy all at the same time. I mean, I'm not being funny about this. It's staggeringly good. It is really, really something. And I saw it, second time I saw it, I was just as every bit as happy with it as I was the first time around. It's outrageous that it didn't win the Palme d'Or, but of course the thing that should win the Palme d'Or never does. And it is, for me, an absolute affirmation that Cronenberg is at the very top of his game. And believe me, if you're a Cronenberg fan, you'll love it. And if you're not a Cronenberg fan, it's a really good way to start because it's a very, very accessible movie.
You're going
to
find yourself on the poster if you're not careful.
Well, I don't need to be because, frankly, there's already enough people on that poster saying so. But it's just terrific.
What's a double declutch, by the way?
You know what you used to have to do with cars, which you used to have to double declutch? If you're going from first gear to second gear or something, you'd have to declutch, put it into neutral, and then declutch again to put it into gear. The idea of just going straight from first gear to second gear is a relatively modern phenomenon, Simon, but obviously you're younger than I am.
Thanks, Dad.
Okay.
Okay, what else?
Well, also out this weekend, in stark contrast, Deuce Bigalow, European Gigolo. It's a new Rob Schneider movie, okay? He's the guy who was the unfunny comic sidekick in Judge Dredd. You remember Judge Dredd, because we all saw that.
I think it was a Radio 1 promotion.
I think it was. He wasn't funny in that at all. He was the unfunny star of Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo. As opposed to what, incidentally? I mean, the last time I looked, gigolo meant male. Deuce Bigalow, what? Sheep gigolo? Okay?
Could be the next one.
He was also the unfunny star of The Animal, which is a film famous for the fact that the only decent review of it was written by a guy called David Manning, who turned out not to exist. He was dreamed up by the publicists because the film was so stinky that they had to invent a critic to say something nice about it. And now he is the star of Deuce Bigalow, European Gigolo, in which the Deuce Bigalow character goes to Europe much in the style of National Lampoon's European Vacation, this time with added sort of gross-out American Pie-style humour, except with all the laughs taken out. And I'm going to play you a clip, and I guarantee you, this is the funniest moment of the film. It is the standout, slightly humorous set piece in a film which is 90 minutes. This is it. After you heard this, you don't need the film.
Excuse me, but in America, they don't allow smoking in aquariums.
Ah. Well, in Europe, we don't unilaterally attack a country just to steal their oil.
What?
What? Did I offend you? Are you going to shock and awe me? Maybe you should check my pockets for weapons of mass destruction.
What are you talking about? I just asked you to put your cigarette out.
As in, what is next? Take wine away from my children? I'll put out a cigarette. God bless America.
I mean, that's it. Believe me, all laughs to be had are in that section. I mean, I hate him. I just don't think he's funny in the slightest bit. Here's the Sun review, and I read this for a reason. The Sun review says, if you're easily offended, you shouldn't go and see it. But if you are somebody who is amused by the sight of a girl with a man's genitals for a nose sneezing into soup, you may well get a chuckle out of it. You know, that's the best review the film's got. It's by Johnny Vaughan. He's in it. He's in the film. That is as good as it gets. I mean, I'm not kidding. It's like Some...
So even if you're in the movie, you're not that impressed?
Even if you're in the movie, it's a three-dog movie. That apparently is good, incidentally. Three dogs out of whatever it is, out of five. You know, I don't. But that's literally as good. I mean, I felt unclean watching it. Some critics who were there laughed and snortled at the sort of gross-out humour in that kind of cheeky schoolboy way. I mean, you know, for me, it was like, it's vulgar, it's stupid, it's obnoxious, it's dumb, but hey, not in a good way. I think he is, like, one of the least funny human beings on the planet. And again, Adam Sandler is to blame because it's Adam Sandler's company who are responsible for this, and we get a smug, gurning cameo by Adam Sandler, as if popping up just to remind me how much I forgave him for Punch Drunk Love, after Punch Drunk Love, and how much I now resent everything. Believe me, it's horrible.
John Allison in Chorley saw History of Violence at a preview last week. Excellent thriller, great performances. Really surprised that William Hurt was the mob boss. He was superb and not over the top, as some have said. Who's this? This is Dave. Dave Harold in Edinburgh. If Mark is reviewing History of Violence, I suspect it will go past him that the lead character is played by a dead ringer of Teddy Sheringham. He's a footballer.
Is he?
Yes.
Viggo Mortensen's a...
This was especially concerning to me, being an Arsenal supporter, bearing in mind the damage Teddy
has done. Arsenal, that's the only thing I know about Arsenal.
Excellent film, Cronenberg back on form.
Yeah, exactly.
John in London. I used to be a fan of this show, but now I've turned off. I don't believe... And all letters that start like this are all wrong.
But on the other hand...
I'm currently listening to some dribbling 80s pop music on another station. No, you're not, John. You're still listening to see if your email's read out. The notion that Viggo Mortensen is a genius or the Robert De Niro of his generation is so laughable...
He is.
I'm off to see Revolver to redress the balance.
Go ahead. And believe me, in 5 years' time, history will have proven me right.
Sean says, just a point of trivia for Crash, the film Crash, a fishing boat off the northeast coast last week managed to transmit this film over the emergency channel, and the lifeboat had to go to sea to tell them to stop it.
Are you serious?
That's censorship. And on the subject of History of Violence, Chris in Brighton, isn't this the same storyline as The Long Kiss Goodbye?
Here's what I want to say. No. And incidentally, can I suggest to everybody that you know as little about the narrative in advance? I mean, that's why I was trying very much to not discuss what then happened. But you know as little about the narrative in advance of going to see it, because one of the great pleasures of seeing the film is watching it move in ways you don't expect it to.
We were talking to Simon Sharma earlier, and I was making reference to the fact that his slave story, Rough Crossings, is extremely cinematic, and I can easily imagine it turning up as a movie.
Steven Spielberg's.
Well, I've just thought of a problem with that, because he's telling the story about the slaves who wanted to desert from their American slave owners and join the British army. But given the way Hollywood works, then the horrible slave owners would have to be played by the British.
Yes, that's right. And that's the way they do it.
And that would
make the whole thing nonsensical. And then in the end, they'll end up on the D-Day beaches and decoding the Enigma.
Duncan in Albridge, having procured some DVDs with rare performances from Madness and Suggs spanning several years, I noticed that the bassist accompanying Mr. McPherson on an episode of The Danny Baker Show from years back was an absolute spit of Mark Kermode, albeit with awful leather trousers. Is this truly the bequiffed one?
It is me, yeah. It was because we were the house band on The Danny Baker Show, and he did a version of Suede Head. As a sort of, I think it was like as an olive branch to Morrissey, because Morrissey and Madness had played some gigs together, and Morrissey had been poorly received. I think he had things thrown at him.
This from Noaz, who says, Simon, Mark, you've got it wrong slightly about double declutching.
Okay, go on.
Because on older, but this is very, very important.
Here we go.
This. Yeah. On older manual cars, this is without synchromesh gears, going down the gears.
That's it, synchromesh gears, that's the thing.
Going down from third to second, declutch and go to neutral rev engine, declutch, you had to go to second.
Okay, fine. Yes, but you know.
Has anyone ever double declutched in a movie, do you think?
Well,
fortunately, there isn't time to explore that.
In the old movies, in which it was a period in which you would want to do that, they clearly weren't driving anyway. That's those kind of movies with the back projection, with the guy, you know, waving the steering wheel around whilst looking over his shoulder. You know, Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca. Yes.
Okay, what else is new?
Goal. So after, you know, When Saturday Comes, There's Only One Jimmy Grimble, Fever Pitch, Green Street, this is another attempt to revitalise the, in inverted commas, British football movie. It's part scripted by Dick Clements and Ian Lafrani, who are on the show recently. And as you probably remember, it's had a kind of torturous production history, because at one point it was down to be directed by Michael Winterbottom. And it's really hard to imagine the film as it is now being directed by Michael Winterbottom. Ended up being directed by Danny Cannon, who, interestingly enough, was the guy who directed Judge Dredd. He was a British filmmaker who made a sort of very flashy feature called Young Americans. Then he got the gig to do Judge Dredd. Then he did I Still Know What You Didn't Care About Doing Last Summer. And the thing that most recently he's received plaudits for is CSI, which of course has been a huge hit television show, which of course I've never seen, but I hear good things
That's
about
good.
It. Yeah, fine. Okay. So it's a fairy tale about a Mexican kid in America playing football in the park who is spotted by a retired English football coach who thinks he's got something, says, come with me to England, I will get you a tryout at Newcastle. Guy comes over to England, gets a tryout at Newcastle. Triumph, tragedy, meets a whole bunch of people, including the real David Beckham, who gets two lines, which he delivers with all the oomph of David Beckham being given two lines. The lines are, you're really good. If you carry on playing like that, you'll be really good. All words to that
I'm surprised
effect.
You've even heard of David Beckham.
Yeah, that's it. That tells you what you need to know about David Beckham. Even I know who he was. And also he meets Anna Friel, who is the sort of putative love interest as a nurse.
Nurse Harmison.
I mean, your first name.
You don't need to know that. You don't need to know where I live, what my star sign is, or what I'm doing on Saturday night. I'm going to have to take blood.
Oh, really? I don't like needles.
But you have a tattoo, or is it a rub-on transfer?
That was a gang thing.
You were in a gang?
Not anymore. There's only three ways to get out of a gang. Either you get shot, you go to jail, or in my case, you have a grandmother who kicks some sense into you.
Ow. Sorry, tough guy.
See, as you can tell from that, it's not a movie for which, dramatic obviousness is a problem, OK? Danny Cannon basically shoots the whole thing so it looks like a beer commercial, so everything's Miller time, because that's what Danny Cannon does. And he gets perfectly nice performances out of the cast, even if though some of them are sort of rather of no fixed accent. And to say it's predictable would be to understate the level of predictability. I mean, basically, you know, it's all there. You've got the angry dad who wants to quash the kids' dreams of football, but actually secretly is kind of proud of them. You've got the whole thing about he goes to Newcastle and then he's in and then he's out and then he's in and then he's out and then at one point he's puffing on an inhaler, which you know is going to be a plot point, and then it is a plot point, and then he's out, and then he's back in again, and then at a crucial moment somebody dies, and he has to make that decision that they're making chariots are fired, you go with your conscience, and you go blah, 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 blah. And I would give away the ending, but there's really no point.
Well, it's not really an ending, because there are two more movies, apparently. It's the first of three.
Well, there we go.
Did you not know? He goes off to Real Madrid, and then he's off to Argentina, I think.
Okay. So, here's the thing. It's not... it's clearly not for me, okay? What I care about football wouldn't fill the back of a small postage stamp. And I'm not a big fan of the over-lit commercials, the music tells you how to do everything stuff. There is some interesting things in it. The view of Newcastle is quite interesting, kind of owes a lot, I think, to Mike Figgis' Stormy Mondays, tries to shoot everything so it looks like LA, actually, which is, quite adventurous. And it's a very stylishly done movie. It's very wooden. It's very, very predictable. It's crowd-pleasing in both the best and the worst senses. And I have to say, it washed over me, but I wasn't unmoved. And that's probably about as good as it gets from me.
You weren't unmoved?
I wasn't unmoved.
Does that mean you were moved?
No, that's why I said I wasn't unmoved.
You were slightly moved?
I had a hint of movement. There was,
now you're talking about something else altogether now. Rob Schneider could have come up with that.
Exactly.
One.
There were moments in which I thought, I am not
unmoved.
Untouched or unmoved entirely. But but it was a fleeting moment. And, if football is a game of two halves, then, I like one quarter of it. And look, I just made a sporting analogy.
Yes, but it was completely unbelievable.
Yeah. But it's kind of, it's
just better than Deuce Bigelow.
It's, believe me,
okay.
Having root canal work done without anaesthetics is better than Deuce Bigelow. And I believe that that it has generally played quite well in preview screenings.
What else?
Also out this week, Four Brothers. What on earth has happened to John Singleton? John Singleton was the great new hope. He was at the forefront of the new wave of, new black cinema. It was him and the Hughes brothers and, Spike Lee. And he made Boys in the Hood and everyone went, great. But have you seen Boys in the Hood? It's a terrific movie.
I don't think so.
Really, really good film. Then Poetic...
Would I have remembered it if I had?
I think you would have done, yeah. Then Poetic Justice, which was a stinker. Then Higher Learning, which was a stinker. Then Shaft, which he kind of wanted to be, offbeat and edgy. It's very ho-hum. It ends up as a very bland mainstream thriller. Then he did Too Fast, Too Furious. And now, we were told a foreword from America was that Four Brothers was a return to form. So the story, which is kind of loosely based on a very famous Western, is that there are four brothers. They are actually four brothers adopted by a white mother. They're not actually brothers. They're brothers in the brothers sense, you know. So you get Mark Wahlberg is one of them, and Andre Benjamin is another one of them. The mother at the beginning of the film gets killed. The four brothers come back to her home for the funeral and also to sort out who done their mum wrong. So it's kind of Latter-day Western. And of course, in the sorting out, fractions break between the group and they all start suspecting each other.
What? You know what you did.
No! Where's Bobby?
Right here, Jerry. What are you hiding, Jerry? Huh? What are you hiding?
I find out you had something to do with what happened to Ma. I swear to God, Jerry, I'm gonna kill you right here and now.
No, Bobby, no!
The angel's gonna ask you some questions, and brother, the time for lying is over.
We know you lied about your business, and we know you got mixed up with some gangsters.
Hold on, man.
Stay down!
Y'all think I had something to do with Mom getting killed?
You got a check for $400,000 that you just so happened to forget to mention for Mom's life insurance.
She took out the policy for the girls, man. I ain't have nothing to do with that. Come on, man.
You made the payments.
Good timing, Jerry. Just when it seems like all is lost for you, Mom gets shot by some gangsters and now you hit the lottery?
So y'all tripping because I made insurance payments?
What? I paid all her bills.
Larenz Tate, who I like very much, who was recently in Crash, not the Cronenberg Crash, the Paul Haggis Crash, and he's in Menace Society. I think he's a really good actor. Turned down the role of Jeremiah in Four Brothers, which then ended up being taken by Andre Benjamin. Now, I think that Larenz Tate made the right decision because I don't think Four Brothers is anything like as good as Forward and it says. In fact, I think it's clunky and creaky and actually all over the place. Andre Benjamin, however, is also in Revolver. And frankly, in comparison with Revolver, let's all say it together, it's Citizen Kane because, you know, slamming your hand in the car door is much better than watching Revolver because it's such an awful, appalling film. If the Cronenberg movie is a sort of textbook on how to negotiate changes in tone, which I think it is, this is a kind of textbook on how not to do it. I mean, on the one hand, it's sort of serio-comic and there's a lot of sort of, you know, wisecracking dialogue between the central characters. And incidentally, I'm a big Mark Wahlberg fan. It takes quite a lot to put me off a Mark Wahlberg movie because I have such, you know, goodwill to him because I think he was so fantastic in Boogie Nights. And I think actually he's a half-decent actor. He's not Viggo Mortensen, but he is a half-decent actor.
Who, as we all know, is the Robert De Niro,
Robert De Niro of his generation.
You better be right about it.
I am right about it. I tell you honestly, download this now and look at it in 5 years' time. So on the one hand, you have that sort of snappy stuff. On the other hand, you have a sort of ridiculous crime plot, which doesn't quite make sense. Then you have these action set pieces in which you have like massive gun battles with huge body counts. And at the end of it, everyone just walks away and there's no police involvement and the police turn up and say, oh, well, hey, like they used to do in Westerns, but like wouldn't actually happen in the real world anymore. And it just, you don't know whether to laugh or to cry. I mean, that's the worst thing about it. So what you do is you sit there squirming awkwardly thinking, John Singleton, once, you know, the great new hope, I wish he could get it back again. This isn't it.
Movie of the week.
By, you know, a mile, A History of Violence. Go see A History of Violence. It is really something. I'm putting it up there as potential film of the year at the moment.
Don't forget, you can download all the movie reviews on the 5 Live website. Go to this program's page and all the details are there. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.